I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. We broadcast live from Co-op, K-O-O-P, 91.7 in Austin. That's K-O-O-P HD1 HD3 Hornsby. that's our new station ID. Rag Radio is also rebroadcast on a number of community radio stations around the country, and our podcasts are posted at the Internet Archive, at Veterans Today, at the Rag Blog, and a lot of places. And the show gets out there. So we have a wide audience, and we have a national audience. Tracy Schultz is my engineer. Tracy,
hey,
how are you?
Good to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here because I wouldn't know what to do. Roger Baker is here taking pictures. And my guest is Austin American statesman, chief political writer, Jonathan Tylove. And we're going to talk about, well, I titled it Alex Jones, Trials of a Performance Artist. Just trying to be clever, but I don't know. Sometimes when I try to be clever. Was that clever? Thank you. I needed some reinforcement there, some acknowledgement. That's Jonathan. Jonathan Tylove just covered the custody battle between Austin-based radio personality, the screaming conspiracy loon Alex Jones, and his wife Kelly. I can do that.
Yeah. I wouldn't go to loon myself.
I'm not. Yeah, but yeah. I'm not. Right. You know, we're not really objective. You wouldn't go to loon because you don't agree with it, or because it would be outside the realm of your.
Well, I think it's prejudges things in a way that. Okay. You know, I wouldn't want to do.
Okay. And his wife Kelly, Tylove, in fact, broke the story of the custody trial, which otherwise might or probably would have gone unnoticed. The story, based on Jonathan's reporting, went national, and Jonathan was interviewed widely in print and broadcast media. We will discuss the trial, including the central contention by his lawyer that Jones is really just a big old teddy bear and his on-air persona is simply performance art. And the larger Alex Jones story, including how he rose to international prominence in fake news era and along the way became something of a Trump whisperer. We'll address Jones' self-professed super virility, 150 women by age 16.
Conservatively.
Conservatively,
he made
said,
sure to
yes.
say that while he wasn't proud of that, no, it was a bottom. It was a floor, not a ceiling.
That was a floor. And also we'll do a side-by-side on Trump and Jones, because I think Jonathan believes they have a lot in common, and I probably will agree with that. Jonathan Tylove was a Washington correspondent for the New Orleans Times-Picayune, from 2008 to 2012, and before that covered race and immigration issues for Newhouse News Service for 18 years. He was our guest on Rag Radio on November 11th, 2016, along with political consultant Glenn Smith. That dynamic duo was scheduled to return on April 7th of this year, but Jonathan called in with his last-minute regrets. He had gotten a hot tip and was covering what we would later learn was the pretrial hearing of the battle between the Joneses. "I'm the only reporter here," he told me, "and I can't leave." Incidentally, Alex Jones, lost primary custody of the two children after a 9-day trial.
Sounds exciting.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know it's interesting because you got the story got a lot of national exposure. And you actually got substantial exposure because you were the primary source on the story, and you were on some television shows, and you were sourced a lot in newspaper articles. And I'm sure that, but it seems to me your head is about the same size.
I'm back to normal size. Well, I've now concluded that it would have been covered because Charlie Warzel from BuzzFeed has been working on a long profile of Alex Jones, which appeared subsequent to the trial. And I found out at the trial that he had been at a previous pretrial hearing. So he knew about it, but that pretrial hearing didn't yield anything. And it was my good fortune to show up at the two pretrial hearings where the Jones's lawyers laid out their approach, their strategy, which was to say that Alex Jones is a character actor and to blame him for to hold him accountable for that would be like holding Jack Nicholson accountable for playing the Joker in Batman at his child custody trial. So, but I do think the difference was that because I was there when they articulated that strategy, the story that I broke saying there would be a trial on the day the trial began and outlining that strategy is what made it take off, because it wasn't simply that Alex Jones is involved in a child custody trial. It's that his lawyers were going to make the argument that the Alex Jones you see or and hear on InfoWars is a role he's playing and not the real deal.
Yeah, and of course he contradicted that himself during the trial, which is one of the things that ways that he reminds me of Donald Trump. I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Right. I mean, the point was that he was whether
he was his own worst enemy.
Whether he wasn't listening when they outlined that strategy, or I think at the time they outlined it, they didn't realize there'd be coverage of the trial, so they thought they could sort of do it with impunity. And I subsequently realized they needed to do that, whether he objected or not, because if they allowed, they wanted the judge to say that anything on from InfoWars was off limits, and they were largely successful, though not entirely. If they had allowed his body of work, or even a infinitesimal fragment of it, to end up being played before the jury, he was doomed, because for a jury who is unfamiliar with Alex Jones, he takes some getting used to.
I think you can say that. Again, Alex Jones, of course, started out in Austin. We'll talk a little bit, or he's in Austin. He's still here.
No, he's
although
in
he just said he might be leaving sometime soon because of his allergies. Is that right?
Yeah, to me, that was the big get of the trial for me, was I found out that he suffers from allergies and may have to leave town. But when the history of Austin is written, he's I would say, the most powerful person in Austin.
Ooh. That's interesting.
I mean, the way he tells it, Trump calls him too often to answer it all the time. That sometimes he just doesn't have time to answer the phone for the president.
His producer contacted me once and wanted contact information for somebody who I'd had on this show, which is interesting because apparently, I don't think he watches the show, but at least they may get our mailings or something. And so I did pass that information.
No, he's eclectic. I mean, his connection with Trump now would make you think that he's a simple right winger, but
he's
left and right and everywhere in between. He's had Noam Chomsky on. He's not as simple I mean, sometimes he's pretty interesting, is what I'm saying. I enjoy listening to him.
Right, right. In fact, you've listened to him a lot.
Quite a lot,
in recent times.
It's an investment. He's on 3 or 4 hours a day every day, so it's a big time commitment.
So how many hours have you committed so far?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I now, you know, measure my life, the regrets of not having really gotten into him until this election. I mean, I knew about him initially from Jade Helm.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, why is Governor Abbott, and who is this guy? Why is Governor Abbott listening to this guy? And who
if
is
you're going
to
mention Jade Helm, we should mention what that was.
Well, it was a military, some maneuvers they were doing here in Texas, and Alex Jones persuaded people that it might have been an effort by Obama to take over Texas. and at some point,
part of a larger conspiracy too.
Yeah, it was,
to
it was
take
big,
over everything.
Yeah, but it was and at some point, Governor Abbott, I think, said he would have the state militia keep an eye on things and just to make sure that there was nothing untoward going on. And I think the governor thought he's just tamping this down. But the fact that he couldn't just say,
That's nonsense.
Alex Jones is a loon, it was testament to the fact that he's got a vast and loyal audience, and you don't mess with him really.
Okay, well, a loon is a bird, right?
Yeah.
So we can at least call him an odd bird. Can we,
the point is, when I first wrote about him, I looked online and I saw him doing these ads with his shirt off for his male vitality stuff, and I thought I could make fun of him and that was, you know, like open season. And then I did not appreciate the gravity of who he is.
Okay, so that we understand a little bit more about who he is, Tracy.
We have a
clip, and we hope Tracy caught everything in it.
No, I got it. Here we go.
Okay, so play that for us.
More than
in fact, let me say this right now. Let me tell. Life. I'm not against gay people. Okay, I love them. They're great folks. But Schiff looks like the archetype archetypal with those little deer in the headlight eyes and all his stuff. And there's something about this hopping around, bossing everybody around, trying to intimidate people like me and you. I want to tell Congressman Schiff and all the rest of them, hey, listen, quit saying Roger and I. And I never used cussing in 22 years, but the gloves are off. Listen, you what the f's your problem? You want to sit here and say that I'm a Russian? You get in my face with that, I'll beat your ass, you You listen, you have crossed the line. Get that through your head. Stop pushing your You're the people that have this country over and gang raped the out of it and lost an election. So stop shooting your mouth off claiming I'm the enemy. You got that? You fill your hand. I'm sorry, but I'm done. You start calling me a foreign agent, those are fighting words. Excuse me.
Now, if you didn't notice, that he is quoting True Grit there. Fill your hand is what John Wayne says. It means take your gun because I'm going to shoot and kill you to the guys opposite on horseback, and he shoots and kills them. So that's how you know that he was kidding, because he's making a True Grit reference in the middle of that tirade. And the background there was he had Roger Stone on, who's, you know, the man who created Donald Trump as a political figure. And Schiff is the head of the House, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. Schiff had implicated Roger Stone and Alex Jones as being part of the sort of Russia connection in helping Trump with the election. And that was Alex Jones's response. And I must say, I talked to Roger Stone. He was a little nonplussed by the response. He's a little smoother. And subsequently,
he's a little super, but he's smoother. But he's also been substituting for he's substituted.
Oh no,
for Trump
he's
show.
A good friend of Alex Jones. He's the person who realized that there was a perfect match between President or Donald Trump and the Alex Jones audience. That they were a match made in heaven. And it would be mutually very beneficial. But what happened was this was a clip that Kelly Jones' attorneys wanted to play before the jury.
The Kelly judge, Jones was his ex-wife.
The judge did not want to get into InfoWars. She said, well, I'm not getting into InfoWars. It's not about that. It's not about politics. Her lawyer said, this isn't about politics. This is about an unstable personality, and that he doesn't leave it at the office. And a couple of days, now the thing to note here is this is a couple of weeks before the trial starts. So he knows he's going into a child custody trial. He doesn't think anything about, you know, saying what he said there. And then a couple days later, he said, that's tongue-in-cheek. And it's only a kind of obtuse audience that doesn't understand when he's kidding. And so ultimately, the judge did not allow that to be played in court.
That is kind of the same argument that Donald Trump makes, too.
I think
didn't know I was kidding, or, you know, couldn't, you know, sort of.
Yeah, correct. I think... where the similarity is, they kept talking about the fact that the trial that Alex Jones was diagnosed as a narcissist, and I don't think there's a lot of question that the president suffers from the same personality, but it's served him quite well. He's president of the United States. I think Alex Jones strikes me as slightly more self-aware of his narcissism.
And plays on it, yeah. Plays with it, plays through it. So, yeah. There's other, as long as we're there for a second, there's other similarities, and what are some of the, how do you see them as being somewhat parallel characters?
Well, I think, and why they kind of work well together is they both are great communicators. They have a real sense of performance. They tap into people's feelings, sensibilities, and fears, and they're perfectly willing to say stuff that's kind of based on rumor or hypothesis or nothing, and just keep going with it. And in fact, that's where Trump got a lot of his stuff in the campaign and subsequent. I mean, the election was rigged with stuff that came out of Alex Jones. The locker up. And the Hillary for prison T-shirts are an InfoWars product. The you know, the idea that there were millions of illegal votes cast. These are all things that are tossed up by Alex Jones. Even the stuff about Obama essentially spying on the president was stuff that kind of developed through InfoWars.
Some of it maybe originated in Breitbart also.
I don't follow them as closely. They're not nearly as entertaining.
No, they're not. And obviously, something could originate in Breitbart.
Right.
And Jones is the one who puts it.
Yeah, and I think that part of what he's able to do, and the reason why he's got a vast and loyal audience. He sells a lot of these nutraceuticals, as he calls them, which have made him millions and millions of dollars. And he's able to, he's able to, it was like a two-way street. He was able to create an audience for Trump or kind of vouch for Trump with his audience, and at the same time create a storyline, a narrative about American politics that Trump could then tap into. And Matt Drudge is sort of the connector because he picks up stuff that Alex Jones puts on InfoWars, and that reaches, you know, a vast audience, an even vaster audience.
excuse me. Trump, to what extent, I mean, there's obviously a number of people who have Trump's ear, and there are different ones at different times, and sometimes it's whoever the last person he talked to, it seems to be the most. But would you, you know, you said Alex Jones is the most, did you say influential? What term did you use in Austin?
I said powerful, but maybe influential is the right term.
Well, how would you move that to the national scene? How influential is he, and especially how influential, really influential, is he with the president of the United States?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a kind of, I think what's clear, I mean, in his book about the election, Roger Stone says he was the secret weapon. I think he played an important role in mobilizing support for Trump, especially from people who are not, a lot of people came out to vote for the first time, people who are not regular voters. And I think that he was important in that. And then I think to varying degrees, Trump has picked up his memes and his theories and his stories. I don't know that, you know, he claims to have this ongoing telephone relationship with the president. I don't know how you can prove that. I mean, he was complaining last time that they hid Trump's cell phone, and he's having now to talk with a third person like Reince Priebus or Roger Stone on the line, so that he's not But you know, I have no idea whether he really has that relationship. The point is that what I found was that through the election and even sometime after that, if you wanted a good read on what the story was going to be, the big story involving Trump, you got it kind of a day or two ahead of time by listening to Alex Jones, so that you weren't surprised by what was happening nationally. And, you know, in the past, you'd think that this was what he was saying was totally disconnected from reality. But now you found that, in fact, he's just a day or two ahead of, you know, tomorrow's headlines.
Of what we now call reality.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio, and we're talking with Austin American Statesman chief political writer Jonathan Tyelov, who has become absorbed in the phenomenon of Alex Jones, and who recently covered his rather remarkable custody trial. We'll be right back.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I have no privacy. Oh, I always feel like somebody's watching me. Tell me, is it just a dream?
Okay, yeah. Tracy.
A little classic there, Rockwell from back in the 80s. Talking about conspiracies. I figure that would be a nice segue.
I want to go get make sure you have that other audio clip ready to go, because I want to remind people what we're doing. I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. Maybe I already said that. Did I already do? Maybe I'm Thorne Dreyer. Thorne Dreyer.
I think so.
My guest is Jonathan Tytlove, chief political writer for the Austin American Statesman, and we're talking about Alex Jones. Tracy, hit that one.
Who has it in confidence, especially if you're famous, said, man, it's crazy. Women throw themselves on you. You can do anything you want. That's not sexual assault. Yeah. A woman's climbing up on top of you. You can do whatever you want. That's what mammals do. She's showing she wants it. She gets it.
Awesome.
Was the basis for a request for a mistrial, that little clip, because, there was a lot of fighting before the trial about what, if any, InfoWars or other clips of Alex Jones they could enter into the record. And that's him on a podcast back in February, Joe Rogan. And the judge, I think, had said that they could play a different part of that podcast where he's taking a puff of marijuana in California where it's legal. And as part of his rigid regime of trying marijuana once a year to test its potency, which is, he said, what law enforcement does. This he did testify before the jury.
Yes, I read.
So
I think I read that in the Austin American Statesman.
Right, or, right. So the problem was that was him responding to the Donald Trump grab 'em quote from Access Hollywood. And that part of the tape was not supposed to be played. And they start playing it, and his lawyers object, and they go and they rush to the front. And they said that was selectively edited, because before he says that, he makes clear that Trump's behavior was inappropriate. Then he says, but yeah, you know, that's what mammals do. And then he says it's inappropriate again. So they asked for a mistrial, and they didn't get it. But that was... that was almost as much as the jury heard of him, and they were told to ignore the fact that they had heard it.
They weren't told that he had 150 at minimum.
Well, no, they were. So this tells you something about where his head's at. There's a gag order. He's trying to keep primary custody of his kids, but he's still broadcasting when he's not. Actually, I mean, it's pretty amazing how prolific he is. So he's broadcasting in the middle of the trial. And on the Saturday at the midpoint of the trial, he has this broadcast where he's talking about how people don't grow up the way they used to. It used to be that, you know, by adolescence you should have kids. And, you know, now it's 35 and you're still living at home and you're not a man. And anyway, I'm sitting Sunday morning listening to the rebroadcast of this. And somewhere 47 minutes in, he starts talking about, you know, by the time I was 14, I was tired of all these kids things. And by 16, I had 150 women, conservatively, he said. And not that I'm bragging. In fact, it's not something I'm proud of, but it's true. And this was his way of saying that he grew up at the appropriate time. So I listened to this. And I'm like, did he really say that? And is there any way he's kidding? And I go back over and over. So I write this, that it appears that following Monday, that he said this, which even though there were 147,000 people who had already listened to it, none of them were reporters who wrote it down and published it. And that next day, her lawyers are trying to get this before the jury. The judge the first time says no, and his lawyers object that's irrelevant. And he did say it was a bad thing. But ultimately, when Kelly Jones testified, she was allowed to say she did not think it was a good idea for their 14-year-old son to grow up with a guy who brags that at 16 he had 150 women.
I guess not. When we talk about the question of that he acknowledges that what he's done, and this isn't the only place that he's done that, that acknowledges that it's not good. It's almost like what he's telling us is that I know I'm bad, but I do these things because I'm kind of an irresistible force. I mean, that's sort of the feeling, but I'm bad, but it's bad stuff.
Right. He wants you to know it. Yeah. And he wants you to know, again, that it's a conservative figure. And yet he wants you to know, it's a disclaimer saying it's bad, but you know that he's communicating it for a reason.
Let me ask, this is one question I want to ask, and then I want to get back. I'd like to know a little bit about the couple's history, about and what his claims were against her and stuff. But, you know, when we talk about the massive audience that he has, and for anybody who hasn't listened to or seen Alex Jones, I mean, he goes crazy. He screams into the microphone. And he doesn't always use all the kind of profanity that we had to bleep out, but he's always outrageous and frequently shirtless. So just like Putin. But the question is, how many of the people, this massive audience is he something like a pro wrestler? You know, where people love to watch him, they love to hate or love them, but yeah. They consider it a show.
Yeah, Kerfob. I mean, that's where I think he's most like Trump. Trump, I think, Trump is in the World Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's right.
And I think he understood that it's about good guys and bad guys and the nicknames and build a wall and, you know, lock her up. But that's all wrestling stuff. I think with Alex Jones, it's a mix. Again, and I should say, you know, when I said that I enjoy watching him, I think to his credit, and I guess it's to his credit, considering what he does, I don't think he's racist. And considering that he's always talking about a global conspiracy, he never talks about Jews. So
interesting.
He's
because global conspiracists usually come around.
Well, and it's George Soros, who's Jewish, is the center of all this. But he manages to do that without that. So I mean, I'm just saying that it would be hard for me to listen to if that other stuff was kind of hanging over it all the time. Right. So there is an element, I guess, where for me it's wrestling and it's performance. And he can be very funny. He's kind of got a slapstick, you know, physical comedy about him. But I, you know, the point is that they buy his nutraceuticals and they vote for Trump. So, and they enjoy it otherwise. And I do think that, you know, it's conspiracy thinking is beguiling. And it, you know, I think for a lot of people, they may not buy the whole package, but they find if you're against vaccines or fluoride in the water, I mean, there's a lot of sort of, you know, semi-respectable conspiracies that he taps into. You know, at his press conference the day after the verdict, he starts with a kind of relatively sane explanation that the final judgment was okay with him. Then it's an attack on the media. Then it's how he's bigger than ever. And then he goes into human-animal chimeras, which are these things which I guess actually do exist and are, you know, created in utero for various uses.
I was going to look that up when I read
you know, and a cameraman from one of the TV stations made the mistake of smirking when he got into that. And he turned it on him, and he said, well, I really don't know. And he said, of course you don't know. But the point is that he could not help himself at a press conference, which is ostensibly to talk about his kids, from becoming the Alex Jones of every, you know, of your imagination.
Of your fears.
Yeah.
So, what was the contention between him and his ex-wife, Kelly? I mean, what was the, you know, how long were they together? Did they have
They were together about a dozen years. She was actually involved in, you know, the show sort of production. She filed for divorce, I think, in 2013 originally. The divorce was final in 2015. And at some point, and I think this is where, you know, the the case was entirely sealed. So as a reporter covering it, you couldn't go back to anything previous because, particularly at Alex Jones' insistence, it's all, you can't look at it. So you're sort of dealing only with what you heard in the courtroom. But my sense is that at some point she kind of absented herself at the time when the marriage was breaking up and he ended up with the kids by default. And, you know, not necessarily his choice. And then after that, he kept them and she had very limited access. And the idea, they made the case that she, they call it dysregulates, which is kind of emotional without, you know, lack of impulse control. And so she was suing to get back to, she wanted either sole or joint custody, and she wanted them living with her and not with him. And I think ultimately what was decisive was that when she got on the stand, she appeared totally under control. And when he got on the stand, he's kind of a mess. He's restless, he can't sit still, he can't stop making faces, and he blows up.
Yeah,
so it turned out that they didn't have to let InfoWars in. He brought that person with him.
Which of course destroyed their whole contention that there's a separation.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as if he was screaming, and he wasn't. He did a little conspiracy. I mean, when he talked about how he tests marijuana, he attacked George Soros for trying to legalize marijuana, which his annual testing has proven is too strong to be legalized and should only be decriminalized. So he did get a little of...
Which is a very interesting distinction if you're saying it's too strong and it's dangerous.
Well,
decriminalization and, you know...
Well,
whatever.
He's a man of subtle distinction.
Yes, it's a subtle distinction, and subtleties are probably... it's funny when we talked about it, and again, character, the idea of his playing a character, I think that is his being a performance artist, that whole thing just being, that mm-hmm. was something that his what was it, Randall Wilhite?
Wilhite, right.
Randall Wilhite, sorry, he said he's playing a character, he's a performance artist. But when that got broken down, then he blamed the media.
He always blames the media. That's his go-to move.
But it's another similarity between
oh yeah and yeah her. Well no and that in fact is I mean that's another great contribution he's made to Trump is the whole fake media, fake news. That's an Alex Jones thing in large measure that Trump adopted. So that whole idea, so to him, and you know, I mean, he's got a much bigger audience than the Austin American Statesman or any newspaper, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he says it's twice Rush Limbaugh's. It's, you know, it's comparable to what Fox gets. I mean, so he's basically saying this is the death throes of old media and he's what is going to inherit the earth. I think that, you know, he has a strange, I mean, he talked about his kids reading the newspaper and saying, Dad, that's not you. I just think it's great that Alex Jones' kids read the newspaper. I think he still, for some reason, he still thinks about newspapers as being significant. He'll refer to his local paper and think they get wrong.
Right.
I mean, that's, I don't know, that's kind of endearing.
Speaking of his kids, I understand that they actually love Daddy. And the question was whether they had been, you know, influenced.
Right, and that ultimately was, I mean, the legal argument that kind of, I think, aside from the testimony of the two of them that turned it, was that her lawyers said that she was the victim of parental alienation, which means that that essentially what they're saying is he brainwashed the kids into hating her, even though he didn't say anything necessarily to make them do that. Now, that seems like a hard argument to make before a jury, that when the kids say they prefer their father, that in fact that means they prefer their mother. But her lawyers were very good at presenting this theory and bringing people who said that kids don't turn on their mothers like that unless something's been done to make them do, now, to essentially brainwash them, because You know, kids don't necessarily turn on their abusers. They often try to seek curry favor with their abusers. So at some point late in the trial, it's like a little kind of a Hitchcock moment where it suddenly flips and you realize that everything the kids were saying, they didn't testify, but what you're hearing when they're saying in support of Alex Jones was actually proof that he was manipulating them. And it apparently, I mean, I her lawyers were quite good, and I think it was a persuasive case that that he's a Svengali, and they said he's like a cult leader, and the kids are like his cult, and I don't think you could disprove that based on the Alex Jones they saw in court.
Okay. I'm Thorne Dreyer. We're talking with Jonathan Tyloff, and we're talking about the great and wondrous Alex Jones and his recent child custody trial. Tracy. Okay, Tracy.
A little bit of Fats Domino for us.
Just, you know, I don't care if it's relevant or not. Throwing in a little Fats Domino is always worth it, so, I think. Okay, this is Rag Radio. My guest is Jonathan Tyloff, he is the chief political writer for the Austin American Statesman, and we're especially right now. He's been on the show before, and we had a lot of fun the last time with Glenn Smith. But we're talking about the great and wondrous Alex Jones, the recent custody trial, and of course, more. Just back to what we were talking about for a second. How influential in a custody trial generally is the wishes of are the wishes of the children?
I don't have the slightest idea. This is the first child custody
You're not an
trial
expert on child custody.
I've covered. I would imagine... it's important. I think you have to be at least either 12 or 14 before they can consider your opinion. Judge Naranjo has met with the children over the years, so she's been involved in this case for some time. So their sentiments, have been considered. And in fact, I mean, and this is what Alex Jones was saying after the, you know, they have this, you know, million or couple of million dollar 9-day court battle, and then she gets primary custodial care, and he says that's okay with him. That's fine. They live 10 miles apart. It's no problem. So you then kind of wonder, so what was the big deal? What was all that about? And he then, I mean, this was sort of the Alex Jones you don't know about, was just extolling the virtues of Judge Naranjo and the family court system in Travis County and liberal Travis County, which recognized what a fabulous father he was because of all the PhDs who testified that the kids were doing fine with him. So He's trusting that Judge Naranjo, who gets to kind of fill in the details of the arrangement, will make sure that he gets a lot of time or whatever time he wants with his kids. He's remarried, and if his new wife hasn't had a baby, she's having one any day now. So I got the impression that, you know, he's okay with how this is working out. The problem is that his wife's argument about parental alienation, the cure for that is a period of cold turkey for deprogramming. So what she wants to do is to cut him off for a little while before he can earn his way back and gain time with him. I think that's going to be up to Judge Naranjo to work out the details, and that's hard to figure because the jury obviously bought into her argument, but I'm not sure that Judge Naranjo is going to think that parental alienation necessarily merits him being denied access to his kids for a period of time.
I want to go into his roots, you know, talk a little bit about the history of Alex Jones and how he got here, but I want to ask Roger Baker to come up here for a second. Roger is never lacking in words, but tell us what you said about your memories. Roger's been in Austin for, I don't know.
Well, it just happened
since time began.
Yeah, I saw Alex Jones maybe 20 years ago, and this is before hardly anyone knew him. But I thought from just his style of delivery that he had the gift of gab and that he was sort of a demagogue waiting for his time to come. So that was my early impression of him.
Well, thank you, Roger. And we have to say that Roger's always, his early impressions are always correct. I think
it's I think there was
a study, and I think it's been officially documented.
So. I think he's, that's true. I think his, you know, in the same way, I think the last time I was here, I said that you can't really blame Trump for being elected president because he didn't hide from the American people who he was. And so if they elected him, it's on them. I think it's also, you know, the fact that Trump listens to Alex Jones is really not on Alex Jones. He's been doing this for a long time. It just so happened that the historic tide turned and a man came to power for whom Alex Jones would be, you know, a think tank.
Did he start out, what was it, on public access television?
Yeah, right.
And that was when? How long ago?
Well, I think he's been doing the show for 22 years, so I think a little before that. He was at ACC.
Austin Community College.
Right, and started kind of hanging out at the cable station and then had a show where it's essentially the Alex Jones show, but just him by himself. And he had, what Roger said, I mean, he had the ability to just sit down and talk and go on about things. And, you know, I think the difference now is, well, first, you know, I think... You know, I was infatuated with Jim and Tammy Faye, watching them. You know, at some point in American history, cable, you know, was kind of lean, and you watched what you found.
Watched what was there.
and kind of odd people became magnetic. And so I wasn't here then, but my guess is that...
Unlike the wives of whatever.
Right, right. So this was...
Their network.
This was, I mean...
Housewives. Go ahead.
Patrick Beach... who was then a writer for The Statesman,
right.
Wrote a story a long time ago. When I looked through the archives, the first thing I saw on Alex Jones was Patrick Beach spending a week watching Austin Cable. And at the very end, he says, the king of Austin Cable is too much coffee man, Alex Jones. And there was some very, you know, quote about just what a stunning presence he was. And when I looked on Alex Jones' you know, press page, like, last year, that was the pull quote from Patrick Beach, misspelled his last name, in the Austin American Statesman. So obviously that was the first kind of validation he got from the mainstream press, and he kept it on. I didn't see it there when I looked a couple of weeks ago, but up until he became friends with the president, that was his calling card.
I think famed atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare also was on Austin Public Television. If I'm not mistaken. In fact, I'm pretty sure of that. It would be interesting to look back, you know, and see, and not just in Austin, but all around, see what people who are, you know, who came up out of that era.
Well, and what I learned from Charlie Warsaw's piece in BuzzFeed is that it was his father, the dentist, who bankrolled his first show at JFK. So he was the advertiser, his dental practice. And he apparently told the producer there, I got a son who's good on the air, and give him a chance. So, and his parents testified at the trial. They now make millions each year because they work for InfoWars.
Okay, and InfoWars is also a publication, right? Or an online?
Well, no, what InfoWars is, so he has a radio show that's on 150 stations. It's on 3 or 4 hours a day. But really, it's online, and then the stuff lasts forever, and he's got like a billion something YouTube. So it's seen, it lives in perpetuity and gets passed on, and it's the way that he spreads it in every platform.
Yeah, but I think there's more than just the radio show, if I'm not...
It's the radio show is then online.
Well, I understand.
And then it's broken up into pieces. I mean, I don't... And then it's all the products they sell, but I think that's... Yeah. That's the main
show. Okay. Yeah. Well, he started out in pirate. He was a pirate radio dude, right? In his early days, Tracy, do you know that?
I just remember him being around and being this interesting figure since the 90s, I would say.
The pirate radio?
Yes.
Well, I think, I don't know this, but I think the station he's on now is
a pirate radio.
It's over by the Carousel.
Yeah. For here in Austin.
Yeah.
Among other places that you can find them nationwide.
So, which means, and what pirate radio means is that you don't have a license, basically, to broadcast.
Right, which is
low-powered and just kind of skirting.
Yeah, but with the internet, it goes everywhere.
We have a license here? We're good here?
Yeah, we're good here.
Yeah, we're okay.
We're okay. Well, I was curious, it's like, you know, talking about being that he's so prolific and these things kind of self-perpetuates, being outrageous adds more YouTube clicks, and which right. also feeds, you know, his wallet. When it came down to the trial, it's hard to believe that folks didn't know about Alex Jones, or there was a very limited amount of clips, and that he had to be filtered before they could play him at trial.
No, and it was remarkable to me. The judge had never ever listened to him. The lawyers didn't seem familiar with him. At the jury selection, there were only a handful. There were a bunch who knew who he was, but there were only two who were regular listeners out of the 72 people at the in the jury pool. It was almost like there was this little island of people who didn't know about Alex Jones, and they happened to be the ones who were sitting in judgment.
Here in Austin. When he's a big character.
Yeah, but when you call him the most influential, it seems to me that his influence is national. I don't know how much...
What
role he plays in Austin per se.
Oh!
Out of Austin, or
maybe he's outgrown Austin. It just happens to be, because he would hector, you know, George W. Bush and Rick Perry and other. I mean, so he's been a presence. I know they sent some reporters over when there was the sit-in against the Sanctuary City legislation. Some InfoWars reporters showed up and were greeted with chants of Alex Jones is a racist. So. You know, he may have a little bit of a local presence, but I think the closest to what I found was local was his role in kind of fomenting Jade Helm, which was a statewide thing. But yeah, I think you're right. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't see other Texas press there, and I don't know whether people are not claiming him. I'm not sure.
I was also curious, you know, as a guy who is prolific and he does Facebook videos and all these things, did you ever catch during the trial him ever speaking about the trial during any of his regular Alex Jones broadcasts? Was he at least mindful enough to keep things separate?
Legally, lived his arrival at court. There was nothing that was not every moment that he wasn't at trial. He was doing something, and he wasn't speaking about the particulars of his children's situation. But he was attacking the press for this fake story that he's a fake. So he was railing against that throughout the entire trial. And this was all a plot to get him, because when you're changing the world, people are going to try to bring you down. The point is that he's in front of the courthouse that Friday after the trial saying, you know, my listenership, my viewership used to be up to the treetops, now it's up to the sky. I mean, it's just, and I think he said this was the biggest week he's had since the election, which was the, you know, so 70, 80 million people are listening to him.
So it was a...
it was good for him.
It was sweeps week for him, basically.
It was. And considering that he seemed okay with the outcome, even though you would have thought he wouldn't have been okay with the outcome, it seemed like it was kind of win-win, even though I think there was a kind of moment when I'm looking at it going, is this the end of Rocco? You know, he's kind of like seeming to come apart at the seams at this press conference. But I don't think that hurts him at all. I think, you know, that's who he is.
Yeah. Didn't he apologize for something recently? For
Pizzagate.
Pizzagate? Was that, did that originate with him? And that was, that actually well, that, started so, as an Austin, or at least no, that, it had no, Austin
that,
impact.
No, that was in Austin. That was a separate
that's right,
spin. Okay. That was a spinoff okay. by one that's of his right, that's right. lieutenants that didn't go so well because, it, you know, it didn't go so well. But that was a case where this was the classic thing where he spreads something and raises lots of questions, and some vulnerable guy in North Carolina, I think, ends up driving up to Comet Pizza with a gun, going inside looking for the, you know, the pedophile network and the children in the basement, which there is no basement. And he ends up getting obviously called by the lawyers for the guy at Comet Pizza, and he has this kind of like stone-faced, I got to read this apology on the air. On the deadline day before you get extra damages if you don't apologize. But what he does with that is what he does with...
That's the gun to the head apology.
What he does with everything is, I didn't say that any of that stuff. I only said that other people are saying it, or I speculated, or I raised legitimate questions. And that's what he did with Newtown, with the Sandy Hook, where you know, the most notorious thing he did was to say that was a hoax. These kids really weren't killed, which was, you know, I mean, beyond incredibly hurtful. But he'll now say... He was only a devil's advocate when he said that. He was only raising, and he said, the same people who got you into the Iraq War are telling you that there were kids killed, so how can you believe it?
What do you call that kind of logic? There's a term. Logical fallacy, but there's some kind. I can't.
Right, so the thing is, you can't listen to enough. He constantly goes on about things, says something, then says he's only speculating, then says he didn't say it, then reinforces it and repeats it. You'd have to listen to all infinite million hours to know for sure what the last word is, because almost everything he ends up saying was not what he really said or meant, or was meant as a joke.
There was also the deal with which he all later said was a joke, about Barack Obama's daughters, and right. I think wasn't he the one who said that Michelle Obama is a man?
Well, no. So what happened was, okay, again, this was how kind of unaware he is of where he is, and like that he's going to trial the Friday before the trial begins. He's on with Mike Cernovich, and they're talking about various things. And you know, I think he says, "Well, I heard, you know, those aren't even Obama's daughters." And Cernovich says, "That's what I heard too." And I'm going like, wow.
Just throws that out there.
Just throws it out there. And then at this press conference on Friday, he says, well, that was a joke. And then he's saying that the basis for that, whatever, that joke, or that would be that, as Joan Rivers said, he said, Michelle Obama is a tranny. Now, he never said that. He was only repeating that. And then he noted that she ended up dead, Joan Rivers. But he wasn't saying that they were connected, the fact that she made that joke and then she was dead. And he somehow gets blamed. And he said, she's obviously not a tranny. And then I'm trying to think what the kicker was. There was he said something else, which was obviously a joke. And he said, but that's a joke. So there's no ever knowing. I don't know how his audience is supposed to know when he's crossing the line and when he's not. And that's, I think, his if he has a flaw, that may be it.
Yeah, I just, you know, we talked about the Trump comparisons, and just so much of this, you just wonder, you know, I can't say that Trump picked these things up from him because I don't think Trump works that way. I think he is what he is.
Right, but that was essentially Trump's approach to the birther thing was, so, I'm not saying this, I'm saying it, but I got people looking at it and you won't believe what they're going to find. And then during the campaign, at some point he decides, that's over.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that anymore.
Yeah, it just moves on to the next thing.
But he's done it with a number of other issues, too.
It was she's not a tranny, she's the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh.
That was the...
So the whole thing's a big yuckum.
Right.
Oh, boy. Okay, we've got a minute, less than a minute. What? Give us your final thoughts on all of this.
Well...
what did you come away with?
I came away thinking that it was good that the trial was covered, that it was revealing, and that, because I think there is a sense you don't want to be exploitative about a child custody trial. And, to a degree maybe it was, but I really think that he's earned this scrutiny and that you learn something about a guy who is important for odd reasons.
So it was an educational experience. So, okay, Jonathan Tyler, thank you so much for being here with us. And we'll do this again.
Thanks.
I wanted to, for those in Houston, there's going to be a book signing that I'm participating in, and Alice Embry and Richard Croxdale of the book Celebrating the Rag. It's going to be at the Brazos Bookstore on May 18th at 7 p.m. That's in Houston. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you, Tracy. I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio.